When your furnace quits, you need it fixed, fast. This is Dennis Sullivan, president of Care Heating and Cooling. Our technicians are paid to fix your HVAC system, not sell you a new one. We show up on time, diagnose the problem, and get you comfortable again without the high-pressure sales pitch. It's our commitment to honesty and craftsmanship that helped us win a BBB Torch Award for ethics and be recognized as Lennox's Partner of the Year in 2024. So call Care Heating and Cooling at 1-800-COOLING or book an appointment online at careheatingandcooling.com when you need a company you can trust.
Moncrief on News Talk.
Nearly 2 years ago, Richard Bennett was barred from entering Afghanistan, which for him was a difficulty, but also not that surprising. Since 2022, Richard has been the UN Special Rapporteur on the Human Rights Situation in Afghanistan. Richard, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
Could you start by telling us who are the Taliban? What's their rationale? What binds them together? Are they a religious group? Are they an ethnic group? Are they a mixture of the two?
They're more of a religious group, but actually the word Taliban means student.
Huh.
And as you may know, there has been internal and conflict and invasions of occupations of Afghanistan since the late 70s. There was particularly bad violence in Afghanistan, especially in Kabul in the 90s. And this group, which are generally educated in Pakistan, was formed and quickly took power. And they were in power from 96 to 2001, until after 9/11. And I think most people will remember what happened after that. And then they were out of power, but fighting for 20 years. And they came back and took power again on August 15th, 2021. So it's now 4.5 years. And they regard themselves as establishing or having established a Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. This is their goal. It's to establish what they see as a pure Islamic Emirate, which in many ways turns the clock back 800 years.
Yeah, indeed. But from the way you phrase that, do they not feel they've established it yet?
I think they feel that they have established it more than any other country. And as you say, I was visiting Afghanistan for a while, so I had these conversations. And they certainly feel they're well on the way to establishing it, but perhaps not quite yet. And we've seen incremental movement towards that. We would see that incrementally they are cracking down on anything that smacks of the West or something that is un-Islamic. And because they, even in the last few weeks, they've had more decrees, I would suggest then they think they're not there yet.
Mm. Now, the when they came back into power again after the American withdrawal, there seemed to be an attempt on their part, albeit briefly, to go, no, we're different and we're going to be a nicer, kinder Taliban. What motivated that? As it turns out, it didn't turn out to be true, but were they playing politics at the time?
I think people will tell you different things, but certainly that is what they told the Americans. And there was talks only between the Taliban and the Americans in Doha, which resulted in an agreement between them in the end of February 2020. And they gave the impression that they were reformed, they were they would let girls go to school, that they would be more modern Taliban. And they were given the benefit of the doubt by many countries, I would say a few Afghans as well, but also by many countries, that they were different. But what's proven correct, I think, is that if you think back to the images of Kabul Airport in 2021 and Afghans, desperate Afghans clinging to the outside of aircraft, maybe they knew something.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And that has been proven, their fears have been proven true.
Yeah. And those people in the airport, particularly, they were probably even more motivated to leave in that they would have worked with the Americans or for the Americans. What's the situation of those people that have been left behind? Was there revenge exacted upon them?
The Taliban announced quite quickly a general amnesty for those who were fighting with the Americans or fighting with NATO, or who were members of the government of the Islamic Republic. But in general terms, it has not been upheld. There are numerous cases of disappearances, of arbitrary detention, of torture, and of killings.
Mm. And in terms of now, I do want to talk about the situation of women and girls in Afghanistan. How many ethnic minorities or religious minorities are in Afghanistan, and how are they treated?
There's a large number of ethnic and religious minorities and linguistic minorities, we sometimes forget, as well in Afghanistan. And they are not treated at all well. I think it's a mistake to say that the Taliban are all one group, the Pashtun group, because there are some Taliban who are not Pashtun, and there are many Pashtuns who are not Taliban. So we shouldn't mix it up or confuse it in that way. But ethnic and religious minorities, be they Hazara or Uzbek or Turkmen or Baluch or other minorities, or if they are Shia or Ismaili, for example, they are discriminated against. They are excluded. They're left out. And they have also been targeted for violence, as well as discrimination and exclusion. Sometimes it gets a bit mixed up. Many of the attacks, physical attacks, are taken responsibility by IS, also known as Daesh. Mm. But sometimes it's a bit murky who is responsible.
Right. Okay. But those attacks do take place.
Yes.
And when you say they're excluded, what does that mean in a practical sense?
Very few meaningful positions in the government. And of course, you were raising women as well. No women in political life at all. So totally excluded if you're a woman, irrespective of what your ethnicity or religion is. And if you're a man, exclusion from government, exclusion from any from civil service positions, and also quite a lot of land dispossession as well.
Right. Now, as you alluded to those talks that the Taliban had with the Americans, where they promised that girls would be allowed to go to school. What is the situation in regards to that now?
It's clear. I think it's more than around 1,700 days since girls above sixth grade have been able to go to school, and a bit less than that for women at university. And there were also some exemptions for those studying medicine, but then that was removed as well. So for a couple of years now, two or three years, women have not been able to study anything at beyond sixth grade. So it's related to puberty, of course.
So there's an active winnowing out process, if you like. So in the very near future, there will be no women in Afghanistan with a third level qualification of any sort.
Absolutely. Many women are determined to get an education, and their persistence and resilience is commendable. They manage to get scholarships to study abroad, including in Ireland. I've met some women studying here, including a doctoral level, actually. Mm. And they're studying underground and online, but that's certainly not allowed. And the outcome will be no professional women. I wrote a report a couple of months ago, and it tabled at the end of February, March, on the right to health for women and girls in Afghanistan. Mm. Now, if there are increasingly few qualified female doctors in a highly segregated society, if you take that to its logical conclusion, women need to treat women, especially for certain medical issues, around sexual and reproductive rights, and eventually there are no women doctors. We said that this is a kind of slow femicide over time.
Yeah. Are they allowed to own businesses or run businesses?
Yes. The one area where there's a little bit more space is the private sector, small businesses, entrepreneurs. And so there is a little space. It's not equal by any means, but there it is still possible for women to run small businesses, yeah.
Yeah. Do they have elections in Afghanistan?
Oh, no.
Yeah, okay, right. Sorry, silly question.
The first thing that the Taliban did was they dissolved the parliament, they suspended the constitution, they suspended all the laws that were existing, although that's sometimes a bit confusing as well. The Electoral Commission was also disbanded. The Human Rights Commission, the Ministry of Women's Affairs, it was all gone within a few months.
Yeah. Going out in walking down the street, is a woman allowed to do that by herself?
No. Again, sometimes it can depend where you are in the country. There's a certain rule about a woman requiring what's known as a mahram, a male chaperone family member, close family member. If the distance is above a certain amount, it's about 70 kilometers because this is related to the Quran. But in some cases, they crack down even more and they require any woman who steps out of the house to be accompanied.
Yeah. And the dress code is...
It's a hijab. It's a full covering, including face covering. Mm. Now you may sometimes see women on the street not completely covered, but again they are taking a risk, and you may still see some women at the market or taking the kids to school, but it's very restricted.
Yeah, is domestic violence legal?
Well, it appears to be because, as I mentioned at the beginning, the Taliban keep passing new so-called laws, and they passed one, they adopted one in January. It was kind of leaked in January. We came to know it, and then it was gazetted. They still run a proper government gazette just a short while ago, which appears to say that domestic violence is allowed, provided it's not resulting in broken bones or obvious bruising. So yeah, it's in this day and age, it's incredible.
Yeah, if a woman is wearing a hijab, the bruising won't be obvious anyway.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's astonishing. Are there any countries in the world that have friendly relations with Afghanistan? You know, do they have allies in other countries?
One country has officially recognized the Taliban, and that's Russia.
Yeah.
Some other countries have maintained diplomatic relations with the Taliban. Several countries in the region have embassies in Afghanistan and have also accepted Taliban diplomats in their own capitals. And there's a couple of kind of westernized countries or groups. The EU has maintained an office in Kabul. Japan has an embassy in Kabul. And there's a few countries even in Europe that have begun to accept diplomats from the so-called de facto authorities, including Germany and Norway.
Mm. And what are the poverty rates like there now?
Shocking. It's an ongoing, very serious humanitarian situation. Afghanistan has always been a poor country. The economy is not doing well. That, you know, combined with, natural disasters and so on, and the decrease over the years in humanitarian aid, especially in 2025, you can probably guess where that biggest cut came from. But it was not just one country. A number of other countries cut their aid. This is a little bit of a controversial issue because the kind of defense for cutting aid is to say, well, we don't want this to get into the hands of the Taliban.
Yeah.
But who is really suffering? It's the poorest people in Afghanistan. There are around 23 million Afghans out of somewhere between 37 and 40 million who are in need of humanitarian support. For me, the answer is not to stop it. It's to ensure that the aid, the support goes to the people who need it most,
yeah.
and to monitor that very carefully.
Yeah. How do you do that, though?
Not easy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think that's the job. That's why we have a UN. That's why we have a World Food Programme or a UNICEF. You know, that's, and the same with the large NGOs, including Irish NGOs. And I do want to give a shout out to Irish NGOs who have continued to support Afghanistan. And because I work in human rights and I work with a lot of human rights defenders, frontline defenders, has been doing a great job.
Yeah. Now, and the poppy trade in Afghanistan during the era when the Americans were there, they were trying to, you know, discourage farmers from or pivot them onto something else. Is that still ongoing now?
The Taliban banned the growing of poppy when they came back in. But it's a bit more complex than that. Yeah, sure, farmers were not allowed to grow poppy, and they did enforce that to a degree. But they also had quite large stockpiles that they had accumulated, which drove the price up. So it was not as if the whole heroin industry ended. It's a bit more complex than that. And the other thing is, these were poor farmers, and poppy is not difficult to grow in the conditions. These were poor farmers, and the question of providing substitute crops still needs to be sufficiently addressed.
Yeah, and I suppose, yeah, and these are out in remote areas, and people wouldn't have, as you say, that much in the way of options. Difficult for the Taliban to police, I would have thought.
I would think so too.
Yeah. The can anything be done about this in the sense that, you know, the Taliban, despite a supposed defeat of the Taliban, they didn't go away and they bounced back as soon as the Americans left?
Well, they bounced back in a way by agreement with the Americans.
Yeah.
Provided they did not hurt American soldiers or American civilians. And provided they did not harbor terrorist groups. Those were kind of the conditions. And what can we do about it now? There's no appetite, of course, for another military intervention. The question is, what kind of leverage is there by the international community to pressure the Taliban into some concessions? Now, they have kind of said what they want. They want the release of their assets, which are held jointly, or not their assets, Afghanistan's reserves, foreign reserves, are held jointly by the US and Switzerland. They want the sanctions dropped. They want a recognition at the UN. It's very difficult to give those things. And what we want to see is improvements. What I call for is improvements in their treatment of women and girls in particular, and in their respect for human rights as a whole.
Are they a signatory? Is Afghanistan a signatory to any international conventions in that
country? Yeah, seven of the nine major conventions are signed by Afghanistan. They remain in force, whatever the government. It doesn't matter if a government changes or even if it's de facto government, including the Convention on the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women. And the committee on that convention reviewed their performance last year and found that they violate every article of that convention. So yes, they are bound by international law, by international human rights law and other laws. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, as you said, you had been there many times before. They did ban you for, I think, was spreading propaganda or something. It was the phrase they used at the time. How do you gather information now?
Well, it's, you know, because we have the internet.
Yes.
And in fact, being able to visit the country, of course, is a benefit. Mm. But these days, it's become, in other countries too, a bit more the exception than the rule. My counterpart in Iran can't visit. My counterpart for OPT can't visit. For North Korea, you know, like you can go on. Belarus, Russia, you know, there's 13 of us who are special rapporteurs. A minority of us can visit, but we have the internet. And what I found when I was banned from entering the country, and I hope that will be reversed, because I've requested a visa, is that many Afghans outside and inside of the country said, don't worry, Richard, we will support you even more. Mm. And so I am able to reach in and speak to people in Afghanistan, or they write to me when I did that report on health recently. I think I spoke to 137 Afghans in 28 provinces. So it's not impossible with the internet.
Yeah. Do you find it depressing?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the thing is, Sean, I think we can't let hope die. And I know, you know, it's also a cliche to say hope is not a strategy. And it's not. It's true. But at the same time, when you see so many Afghans, especially the women and girls, fighting for their rights, determined to get an education, if they're not going to give up, then I don't think we should give up either.
Richard, thanks very much for coming in to talk to us today. That was Richard Bennett there, the UN Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in Afghanistan.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.